thing on? Is my mic on? Testing. It's on! Yay! All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Derek, and I am the owner, creator, and head silicone slinger here at Amavidi, where we make silicone toys for adults. All right. I have Matt from Silk Arts, who's going to be joining me here in just a moment. And I'm really looking forward to this one. This, I've had my eye on Silk Arts for several years. I actually was very, very envious of something that they put out that I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to corner the market. And then I figured out that they've already done it. And they've done it so well, I was like, I can't copy it and try to steal it. So we'll bring Matt on here in just a minute. And we'll talk about some of those things. Before I do that, I wanted to say thank you to all of my patrons over on Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/Amavidi, A-M-A-V-I-D-I. And I think it starts at, I don't even know, it's some piddly amount. But if it's something you want to do, you want to support us, then you are welcome to use Patreon if you like. And I see we've got Brandflakes in the chat. That is awesome. Good to see you again, Brandflakes. You might also have seen, I need to get this into the show description at some point, but I'm going to send a link to George because I released Dildo Making 103 this afternoon. And this one really sucks, I'll say that, because it's about vacuum pumps. I gotta work on my puns, but I'm gonna send a link of that to George so she can get in the chat. But Dildo Making 103 vacuum chambers and vacuum pumps went out this afternoon, and I hope that people enjoy it. So all right, with that, I am going to bring Matt on, and we will go from there. Let's see. How does this thing work? Is that what I do? Matt, how you doing, man?
Hey, how y'all doing?
I am good. I want to say thank you for joining me tonight. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love your show. So.
Oh, thanks.
Huge fan.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I had one of those moments of, I love your show. And I'm like, I've never had anybody say that to me before. I'm like, it's one of those things you walk up to somebody, you fanboy over, and you're like, oh, I love your show. And now somebody's saying that to me. Okay, you caught me off guard there. All right, Matt, why don't you take like 30 seconds and give us the quick thumbnail sketch of what Silk Arts is?
Yeah. So I'm trying to come at this. I'm trying to approach this industry from a design. I'll get back to this in a moment, but from an art perspective, art and design perspective, which is not to say that all the amazing artists out here in this industry aren't also making incredible design work, right? I mean, I'm constantly blown away by what I see, to the point where it's kind of intimidating. I mean, there's just so much talent in the indie scene. It's really incredible. But you know, I tattooed for 15 years. I come from a long line of professional artists, and so I wanted to bring, you know, art and design from a little more traditional sense to the industry. You know, and I think there's been a void of that. I mean, obviously this gets mentioned in a lot of your interviews, but. When you go to the big box stores, it's the same old, and there's some guy in a polyester suit from the 80s that's making design calls, and it's just gross, you know? So yeah. I wanted to bring some class to it, you know?
Well, that's awesome. Now, I did not know that you did tattoos. Somehow, in our pre-show interview, that never came up. Why is that?
Yeah. I don't talk about it a lot. Okay. I finally, a friend of mine, who I bounce ideas off constantly, like finally convinced me to put it in my bio. way at the bottom. I don't know. You know, it's like a cool kids club, and I just don't want to try and play that, you know? Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's
fine. I don't have a great answer to that.
You know, it's weird how we all kind of bring our own history to what we do. You know, I have a background in jewelry design and, you know, jewelry manufacturing. And then, you know, I was thinking, I can't remember who I was having a conversation with, but I realized that, you know, I took some of my dad's art styles and brought them together into my own. And that's kind of had an impact on what I do. So, you know, it's great that we're able to draw from those histories that we have that we can go into.
Yeah. Now, what was your dad's art? I'm just curious.
He was a graphic artist. Okay. He did a lot of forms. This was back in the 80s. So this was, this was still digital typesetting, but it was before we had desktop typesetting. So, you know, these are, if you know anything about like the Verityper, and you know, these are machines that had, were, well, back then they were like $30,000-$50,000, and they had these fonts that you loaded through film onto reels, and it was super cool.
Wow.
But he made forms. He drew lines for a living, as he used to say.
One of his big
projects was working for the local bus system, Tulsa Transit. And he did all of their maps for all of the routes. That was...
So, just out of curiosity, based on that, I mean, I'm looking at your logo right now, which is has some pretty linear concepts to it. Is that... I mean, how would you say that his art influenced your art?
When all the work that he brought home, which was his more creative stuff, was all black and white. It was all graphic. Okay. It was all high contrast and refined line work. And so that's kind of where I'm drawing the connection myself.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll have to forgive me because I'm kind of geeking out here too. So, you
know. No, it's totally fine. I mean, I want this to be a conversation. So if something comes up, jump in. Now, everybody always asks the question, how did you get started? But I want to focus in a little bit differently. Why did you get started? Why did you get started in this business?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously toys, right? I mean, we all love toys, but that's a kind of boring answer. You know, honestly, I was looking for something. I was bored tattooing. I'd done it for 15 years, and it was time to move on to something. And this business, this was before I discovered, you know, Bad Dragon first, and then I found the indie scene, which is super exciting. It just stole my attention. You know, I love a problem to solve. I love materials. I didn't realize that I loved materials until I got into this and had to figure out, you know, all these complex processes. You know, there was no savior giving me a tutorial 6 years ago when I started down this road, you know? So, as frustrating as it was, I loved every minute of the problem solving. I love doing research. As frustrating as it is, I love doing research and experimenting. So, I think all those things combined, you know, really grabbed my attention.
Yeah.
So,
it's, you know, we all come to this. We can all say like how we, you know, one day we were just like, oh, toys, I can do this. But then there's always that why. And there's always that question of, you know, what is it that you're bringing to the table that nobody else has before? Or what is it that you're doing that is different? And one of the things that I think is freaking awesome that you have been doing is your Silk Touch. Why don't you take a second and tell us, number one, what that is and where the idea came from?
Yeah, I love that. I love this project. There's a lot of these sculptures a lot of the sculptures I've worked on, I love, but I'm in love with this project. I'm an able-bodied guy. I was sitting around with some friends having a beer, and we were talking about where to take this project, you know? And when it comes to business, I'm often looking at what's in the market to figure out what's not on the market, you know? I don't want to make another dragon toy, you know? It's been done phenomenally. Okay, I do kind of want to make a dragon toy, but it's a little lower on the list for me. I'll get there when I get to it. So the Silk Touch I was sitting around chatting with some friends about where to take the business, talking about how to get creative and fill niches in the industry. Making an accessory to make accessible toys came up in conversation. You know, the next day I go on the internet and I'm like, well, there's gotta be a million, this has gotta be a stupid idea, right? Because it's so obvious. It's gotta be done. Somebody nailed it. I couldn't find anything. This was 6 years ago-ish, maybe five. And so there was a few things, you know, some grinding pads or back cushions, whatnot. So definitely helpful accessories, but very limited. The concept got put on the back burner, life got in the way, I moved, etc. I came back to it. I figure somebody's already fixed it by now. Still nobody's done this, you know, done anything about this. I can't believe it. So this is the I'm trying here. This is the Silk Touch Vac Lock handle.
Yeah.
Is this better? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, it allows an ergonomic grip to put a toy hopefully where you want to put it. I've got a model with a Vac Lock attachment, and then I've got one with a suction cup platform. This is a medium size. I'm doing this all, but I'm backwards here. And then I have loop handles here. So you don't have to hold as hard. You don't have to have as much hand strength. That in itself was, I think that was a year in prototyping just because I was so busy. But, you know, again, getting back to materials, brand new material. There was a bunch of research on, R&D on what materials to use. I had to learn new casting processes, new molding processes. I've actually got a similar mold here, a four-piece mold, which I'm pretty excited about, related. And again, this is, you know, there's been a, this industry has, accessible toys have come a long way, you know? I mean,
Brandflakes in the chat has got a couple of questions going, but he brought up one point that, you know, why would somebody even need that was the question from Brandflakes, which I understand, but why don't you tell us?
Yeah. So to answer the question, you know, plenty of people have mobility issues. They have reach issues from hand strength, range of motion, physical, some people, have larger frames, larger bodies, you know, with a large curved handle, it's more comfortable to put the toy where you want it to be. And I feel like obviously if you go to the big box stores and look at your options for accessibility, these communities are completely neglected. Some of my heroes in this industry, you know, I follow Andrew Gerza, who's, I'll mention he's got a product that sorry, they have a product, which is pretty amazing. But they had a quote a couple months back that said, and I hope this is the right person I'm accrediting this to, but that said, look, we're all of us will be disabled, you know, and for some of us, it's an accident or it's age, but we are all going to be disabled. And that blew my mind, you know, and it's so true, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, George has already mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, is that she has rheumatoid arthritis. And so she has, you know, grip strength issues and flexibility issues. And so, you know, this is like where my brain was at when you were talking about that. But also, you know, sometimes it's just about comfort. And, you know.
Yeah, holding a toy like this isn't that comfortable. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, you made my point there, which is that, you know, sometimes you just want something that makes things a little bit easier. And, you know, and then you've also followed that up with the fact that we're all going to be disabled in some fashion at some point in our lives. And so, you know, I think it's, I actually had somebody come to me, when I first got started asking for something like this. And, and she had, well, of course with my friends, it's all TMI, but you know, she had described to me some of the things that she had, struggled with and how she had approached it for herself. And it was all, you know, bashed together and it was not ergonomic and all these things. And I was like, hey, you know, that's a great category to be looking at. And then I ended up sending her your way because, you know, you had already done it so well.
And let me just throw in there that, you know, I've had some, I'd like to also give a shout. I hope this isn't too many shout outs, but, I would not have gotten, would not have been able to develop this toy without some pretty, some incredible folks that consulted, that I consulted with. And Eva Sweeney from Cripping Up Sex was super helpful, and also Pleasurable is an organization. And both of, all of these are advocates for sexual education and disability advocates. And they've all been super helpful.
You mentioned Andrew earlier. Who was that?
Andrew Gerza, again, he's a, you know, sexual health and disability advocate. And they've I'm so, I have a crush on this on this design. It's so innovative. They made the Bumpin joystick. That's BUMPN. And you know, again, it's for folks with some limited movement, and it's just a wonderful design. And the joystick, it's called the joystick, and it kind of looks like an old school joystick. It's awesome. It's,
from the old Atari days? Are we talking like?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's great. You know, and it totally plays on all my like 80s, 90s nostalgia. You know, genius design. But that I want to throw in there, you know, I think Brand Flakes was the one that asked, why do you need this? And so when you get into, you know, innovation, it's a double-edged sword. So
can you hold that up one more time?
Yeah. So, you know, innovation is a double-edged sword because you... Nobody knows they need it. Mm. Yeah, it's, you know, if you make something brand new that nobody has seen, you're rolling the dice, you know.
Yeah.
And for the other makers out here, you know, I mean that's where the potential for growth is for sure, and that's where the potential for you know, a beautiful concept to just collect dust is also, because I have to explain to people, you know. This isn't just for folks with mobility issues. You know, I, when I when I was testing this, I tested it with I had some of my able-bodied testers try it, and they were ecstatic, you know. Because it's just a better way to hold a toy, you know.
Yeah.
You get a more realistic range of motion. It's just a better it's just a better product. For some people. It's not for everybody, you know. But
right. You know, to riff off that idea, there's the old joke of, you know, Henry Ford, and, you know, if he had, he said, you know, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
That's right.
You know, he ended up coming up with a car and, you know, what that led to. You mentioned testers. How do you go through that process of testing?
I love my testers. They're just incredible, and I value them so much. Personally, I mean, I get emails every day for, you know, hey, can I test for you? And I'm very picky about who I start that relationship with. Most of them tend to be a varied collection, you know, on all aspects, body types, you know, go down the list. They tend to be friends, old clients from tattooing, current clients, you know, repeat customers, people that have sent messages, unrelated messages, and we communicate well. You know, that's how I collect them. But I think they're an unsung hero for us indie makers. So, you know, you develop something, you send it out, hopefully you nail it in one or two versions. Sometimes you don't. I'm a year in on prototyping, and you know, a new attachment for the Silk Touch, and still going, hoping. It's still trying to learn, you know, trying to get the you know, get that feedback and make adjustments. Sometimes it takes a while.
I want to interject here. Branflakes has one more question. What's your favorite aesthetic silk arts? Is it organic or non-organic?
Oh, this is an interesting question. Are you?
Yeah.
Are they asking from the tattoo world? Because that's right. A thing.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I've got a rose plug here. So that's organic. I love these little guys. They're adorable.
I love how you play with that idea of the rosebud.
yeah. You know, trying to take literal things and turn them into dual. You know, take shapes and turn them into dual purpose. Some of my other ideas are a little less straightforward. But I like that play for sure.
No, I kind of looking at your pieces, you know, it definitely lends itself more towards the organic side if not a little bit abstract. Because I don't see anything that is realistic. There's the rosebud, but aside from that, everything else is abstract or slightly fantastical. So, but it's still more in the organic category. Yeah,
that's a nice way to say that.
Yeah. Okay, so back to what we were talking about. We were talking about testers and how we go about that process of taking an idea and bringing it into the world. You know, I have my core group of testers that I work with, and, you know, I'll often play with them a little bit because I'll send them things that I know that isn't their style. Because I want to see what they have to say about something that they probably wouldn't like. And then, you know, there's that back and forth of,
you like that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I approach it. I keep going back to my notes because as you're talking, I'm kind of making notes to myself here. And you mentioned the market and kind of where you see it going or trying to predict where it's going. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, there's some obvious trends that are happening. The market is absolutely moving towards accessibility. Not the whole market, of course, but you know, when you look at the indie shops, a couple of them are starting to have, you know, in their subcategories of shopping, they're starting to have accessible options. I definitely think that there's more of a demand. I think our industry of indie makers and more creative products, more inclusive products, more inclusive branding. I think the indie retailers are definitely taking notice. And frankly, they're bored. You know, the target demographics, I think, are frankly bored. I don't think we're a really hard sell for most people, you know, you know, the indie makers. I mean,
I think the hardest part for us to reach our audience is the screen. We're trying to do it electronically, and you're trying to describe something that is meant to be felt. You know, that's something I think that we struggle with as indies, and that if we could get into the stores and if we could figure out a way, you know, I'm just thinking, like, here, how about a sex toy mall for indie makers? That would be freaking awesome. Stores for each of the makers.
Or maybe an indie, you know, a mini indie convention. You know, I don't know. I have two wholesale accounts, and I've had them for about a year, and they were ecstatic for me to show up, you know, just to have some options, you know, some new options, you know. I mean, we all know what the big box stores carry. There's some innovation there for sure, you know. But I think the bread and butter is the same old boring stuff, you know. And I think they're hungry for us, you know. So,
yeah, I wonder if there's something there for somebody to become a distributor, collate.
Oh, an indie distributor.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's craft beer distributors that specialize.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a very good idea.
Okay.
It's not going to be me.
I have to put that in my list of businesses to start.
Yeah.
So we kind of bounced around here a little bit, but you mentioned earlier Tin Cup.
Tin Cup is my personal creative endeavors. You know, I try to keep Silk Arts really on brand, and I'm very careful about what directions I go, and maybe a little too careful. And Tin Cup is, you know, before I found the indie toy industry, I was looking to get into sign painting, natural transition from tattooing. So that's how I started with that name. And then it kind of just morphed into whatever creative endeavor I'm currently geeking out on. There is some crossover. You know, I don't know how this works. This is a, this is a skull. I can't, I keep going left when I'm supposed to go right. This is, you know, a project just using up some old potting silicone that I had from a commission. So there's a little overlap here and there. And then there's stuff where, you know, this is definitely tattoo related. This is a human jaw with scroll work. My light, I'm sorry, my light in here is terrible, and it's the only light I got in this room. So.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, we keep, I'm sorry, I keep getting distracted here because there's so much to jump on. Now, you know, we've talked about sculpting, we've talked about tattoo, we've talked about dildos. Let's talk about, you know, how you've made those transitions, how you've kind of slid between all those different categories.
That's an interesting question. They definitely inform each other. I mean, so there's some obvious stuff, right? Like, this is my packaging. This left instead of right, you know, this is definitely tattoo and like design oriented, or at least, yeah, thank you. Let there be light.
Yes. I love that packaging,
just
though.
Just a little.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some overlap. They play with each other for sure. Are you asking professionally or just interest-wise? Or
I think it's a little bit more interest-wise and in how they kind of inform each other, in the sense that you've had these what seems like very smooth transitions between these styles and these ideas, and I'm kind of curious what the person is behind that makes that kind of transition possible.
Yeah. I try to keep an open mind, you know. I try to find inspiration anywhere. I like to find problems to solve. I like to find beauty. And so when you take, and I try to remember where I'm coming from. And so, and I try not to, predetermine where I'm going either, you know, which is a lot. I mean, that's a whole jumble of words, you know, that's a lot to balance, but, you know, when I get, some inspiration for, you know, when I'm geeking out on flowers, like that might end up being, again, a rose plug. That might end up being a sculpture for Tin Cup that I cast in cast stone. I mean, it could go anywhere. And if you're open, if you're being creative and playing, I mean, that's where my magic comes. You know, when I'm geeking out on something, I'm really just letting go. And then you can be fluid like that and kind of bounce around. Was that too abstract?
No, I think that if I can kind of bring it together is, as you were saying,
please,
being open to the crossover in yourself and, you know, not feeling like you have to be constrained to one category or one type of art, and allowing that to just kind of, I don't know, just go with the flow is one way of putting it. Now, in our pre-show interview, we talked about your paintings from Goodwill.
Can I show you one?
Yes.
I love this painting. This left, not right. Again, sorry, the lighting in here is terrible. But
no,
this
it's
is a
awesome.
Goodwill painting that I found and bought for $4.99 and painted a monster cat with laser eyes into. Because
I'm over
hilarious.
Here crying because it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah. There's another one. I think the light in here is too bad, but that's we found that on the street. There's a gloop monster, that pink blob. Anyway, that's oddly my mom. One of my moms grew up with that painting in her house, and
Wow.
And she came over for tea one morning and was like, "What?" It was great. So,
yeah. Now that was something when we were talking about it. I was just like, "I love this idea." And you know, this is stuff that is either, you know, disposable or trash. I mean, you say you even found one of them outside. But again, bringing it back into the something that you can enjoy going forward.
That's right. That's right. And get, you know, getting creative with it, repurposing. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun. And I love, I love those opportunities to kind of, stretch a little bit, you know, like how am I, what am I going to do with this? You know, how do I make this enjoyable? You know?
So. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm over here wiping my eyes because I'm just freaking out. It's like laughing like crazy.
I felt bad that I was bringing so many props to this meeting, but
no. Huh? Okay, so let's talk about your props. I think you said you had a mold that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I brought some glove molds, but everyone's seen glove molds.
Well, go ahead and bring one out because you know, yes,
sure.
I've seen a thousand of them, but
yeah, right. So this is a glove mold for left, not right. This is a glove mold. The way that I go about this is I have a hole in a piece of ply or MDF and I hang these, which just, it's a more economical approach to making a mold. I also, when I was designing this toy, I needed, let's show these together, left, not right. I needed, because of this bulbous, because of how bulbous that end is, I need a lot of flex to get it out of the mold, right? And so that was part of the molding process, was figuring out how to do that, right? If you, a lot of folks use solid block molds, right? One piece block molds, and you're just never gonna get it, something bulbous like that out.
Unless you use a really soft silicone and then—
Sure.
Your production lifespan is you know, a fraction.
And you see those demolding videos, you come across them once in a while and they're like, you know, I mean, it's a workout, you know? So yeah, I prefer to use those. They're a little more, glove molds tend to be more economical. You're using less material, you have less waste when they get to the end of their life. There's a little more infrastructure. You need racks to set them up, you know, whatever. We all find, us makers, we all find creative ways to work out these problems, you know? And luckily now there's a lot of folks, such as you, Shop Dad, et cetera, that are like, sharing some of this knowledge and you can, the forums, maker forums, you know, you can go ask questions and see examples of and decide, you know, make an informed decision on what you think is what's a good fit for you and your process. That's pretty standard. This is a four-piece mold. This is for I'm sorry, I keep doing this backwards. This is a four-piece mold for a Silk Touch prototype that I'm working on. Hopefully me and the testers figure this one out. We'll see. So we've got our two halves here. So this is a four piece. And again, some, you know, I got a couple casting heroes that I've gotten tips and tricks from, but a lot of this I had to just figure out from trial and error.
Yeah.
And so we've got our two pour spouts at top. And then this is a resin insert. And you'll see that this end corresponds with this end. Right. Yep. And so that's, you know, that's how I make these. This took me a couple iterations to figure out. And then the bottom there is for the, I'm working on a vibrator holder. Might turn into a grinding pad with an optional vibe holder. The vibe might get nixed and it might just turn into a grinding pad. We'll just see how what the testers have to say about it. You know, not all your great ideas work, you know? That's just life.
Yeah, it is. And,
you know?
There's I had a conversation with Twilight Meadow Creations a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I pulled a little snippet out and posted it on Twitter and TikTok, I think. But it was, we were talking about fails, and you know, you just said, you know, some of your best ideas, they just fall flat, either because of, you know, you overlooked something, or you know, what have you.
Materials issues. I mean,
I'm always curious about how people deal with failure, because that's a it's such a big part of what we do as artists, as creatives, that you know, there's so much failure that happens in our process. I'm always curious, how do you deal with failure?
I like how you frame that question, because it's more than just as toy makers, you know, as creatives, you know, if you're taking risks, then, and you should be taking risks, then you will fail, you know, what do you do with that failure? You know, on a personal level, I on my good days, I pick up and I get back to it, you know, and there's, you know, this this vibe holder attachment I put down for 6 months, 9 months. I'm three iterations in. I'm on V3, three molds. These things are probably $60 in material each, easily. They were, now that, you know, my mold rubber has gone up. I think my spreadsheet said it was 68% in the last 4 months. You know, I mean, it's frustrating. You know, it can be demoralizing when you're into version three and three molds and dozens of testers going out, and it can be hard. And then, you know, last week, I was just, I think it was after you reached out to me, and I was brainstorming, you know, I was at my studio and I'm brainstorming and I'm thinking about, I'm like, I don't do anything. I don't have anything to show for what I do, you know? And then this project popped into my head, and I was like, well, that one's pretty cool, you know? And just this week, I like started prototyping on this product again, you know, because I want it. It's a good idea, and it's worth, and it's not even that it's a good idea. I like it. It's exciting to me. I like the four-piece mold. It's just a sexy mold to me, which means it's a sexy process to me, you know? And so I'm just geeking on it, you know? And I just want to see this work, you know? And maybe it doesn't. That's okay. A lot of the good ideas don't work. And we pick ourselves up and we find something else sexy to go after, you know? Some other project. And I don't know. Some days it's hard, you know? I don't know.
Right. I love what you said there about, you know, we're always challenging ourselves, and if you're not challenging yourself, then you're not failing, and if you're not failing, then you're not progressing. Well, that's not necessarily true, because you can fail a lot and still not progress. I have several employees who can prove that.
But you got to learn how not to make the light bulb, you know, and that might take you 1,000 iterations, you know, and that's okay, you know.
Worm Inside, this is a comment that was in the chat, and I think this is when we were talking about glove molds and block molds and plugs and things like that, and they said that they use 0050 and it comes out fine, so I'm glad it works. Well, I'm not sure. They didn't say specifically.
Oh, for pulling.
Whether,
yes.
Yeah. But I'm glad it works for you. That's another thing that we as makers, and maybe specifically into this category, is that we have to find our own way. And you just barely touched on it about how the way you set up your molds is that you have a sheet of MDF or something with holes in it that you drop molds into, which I think is awesome, because, and I've I've thought about that. I want to steal that idea. But what I want to...
It wasn't mine.
Well, what I want to do is on the underside of that, on so you've got the holes that you drop into and there's a kind of a void underneath, put a, a heater under there.
Sure.
And kind of create a hot box. And
yeah, I use that too.
Okay.
So what are you... Are you trying to... Are you dealing with cure, like trying to speed up curing in the winter? Like what's your...
Yeah, that would probably be it. This was when I was in a particular place that was fairly cool. Where I am now, it doesn't really matter. Actually, a problem I have now is that it's usually too hot.
Yeah.
Which it was 107 today. So, yay. Yeah, I didn't go into the studio today.
You know, you're talking about putting a heater. So I've got a rack in my studio, which is open on the top, and I can, you know, pour 20 toys or whatever it is and just stack them up on the rack. And then I'm in New England, so it's pretty cold in my studio in the winter. And so I'll pour, and then I got an old bread rack, rolling bread rack, and built it, insulated it, put hard sides on it, built a door on it, built racks in it. And so then I can take this, you know, piece of this mold, left, not right, you know, hanging on my MDF with a hole in it, and slide that into my bread rack. And I've got a heating pad in there, and it's all insulated up with a controller and all that. And it works wonders. It's great.
Good. So. I ended up 3D printing my own mold stands, and
I'm so jealous of that.
Oh yeah, so you? I'm. That makes me think that you hand carve all of your masters.
No.
Okay.
Just not a good. I'm a bad tech dork, and I'm so envious of the people that are good tech dorks. I have a 3D printer. I've got a Bowden. I've got an old Rostock Max V2, and it works. You know, I can keep it printing, and because I'm gonna sand and prime and finish my masters manually. But it's a lot of work, you know, and I'm just not a good tech nerd to like figure it all out, you know. And the same thing with like hard surface modeling. I'm terrible at it. You know, I struggle with that. Once I get it into sculpting mode, I use Blender. Once I get it into sculpt mode, we're off to the horses. I'm good, you know, because my mind works with brushes and carving tools, but parametric modeling, I don't know. I don't even know what that word means, man. You know, like, I don't know.
I'm kind of the other end. I can't get Blender to work with my brain. My brain does not Blender. But Fusion 360, which is purely parametric, I love
it. Is that like AutoCAD, like the new generation of AutoCAD? Okay.
Yeah, it's made by Autodesk, who makes AutoCAD and Maya, and you know they've got a whole bunch of different programs under their umbrella. But yeah, they started off with AutoCAD. But Fusion 360 just worked for my brain. And you know, I come from when I was in high school, and I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but when I was in high school, I took drafting, and you know, we had paper and we had lead holders. We didn't have pencils. We had lead holders.
We had paper.
Right. And you know, so again, kind of informing the way that I work now is going back to, I'm used to drawing and thinking in terms of a three view drawing of, you know, you have a side view, a top view, and a front view. And so that's how I visualize things. And so Fusion 360 works perfect for me. It's a little bit funky, but it's gotten better. Sculptress, not Sculptress because that's kind of defunct now, but ZBrush is another one that's really good. It's really good for organic shapes. So
yeah, Yeah, yeah. My pops is a draftsman, has been his whole life too. And he, this is a complete aside, unrelated, but he's always complaining about the kids these days, you know, because they learned on AutoCAD and don't know how to draw. So he's always talking about that. But
yeah, let's see. I will mention, George has mentioned it in the chat, but I will go ahead and throw it out there as well. If we mention anything, this is not sponsored in any way. This is our experiences. This is our perceptions, our perspectives on any particular products we might mention. So don't feel like this is endorsed or anything, that somebody's slipping me 50s under the door as I talk about anything here.
But we would definitely appreciate 50s. Bring them. It's fine.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to open it up, make sure that everybody knew. If you have any questions, drop them in the chat. And Matt, if you've got questions for me, feel free to throw them at me. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, I've got a bunch of questions, but the ones, but the one that I like the most is just, what are your current pour jams? Like playlists. What are you geeking out on?
Okay. So
we don't have to talk about it.
No,
it's okay.
I am a fan of trip hop. Going back to Portishead and Massive Attack. You know, work one back into the 90s and 2000s.
Is this like DJ Crush, all that? Yeah.
Yeah. Sneaker Pimps, and you know, that is my jam. That is where my heart goes. Now, there are times where I get this weird bug up my butt where I'm going back into like 60s, 70s, and 80s country.
Whoa, so, okay.
Yeah, so
that's
Johnny,
quite the jump.
Isn't it though? But you know, I'm like Johnny Cash, Dolly Parton.
Classics.
What I consider to be classic country, and it happens sometimes. And then I'll go into the other direction and go into my 90s, like Nine Inch Nails. And
Pretty machine. Yeah.
Yep. So my taste in music goes all over the place.
But
I do generally kind of silo it into, today I'm going to be doing trip hop. Today I'm going to be doing country.
I'm all over the place in my day. I've been listening to I think Fela Kuti is my surprise favorite right now. Just like 70s, 80s, heavy horn, heavy groove, like it just makes me happy. Just makes me smile. I don't want to listen to like punk rock all the time. You know, I want to smile sometimes.
Once in a while, George will come into the studio and she'll pop Spice Girls in. And I mean, sometimes you just have to have, you know, a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
And Spice Girls are nothing but fun. Yeah. I can't do it for long, but they are there. Now, one of the questions you asked me in our earlier conversation was about flops and how we deal with those. Do you want to take a stab at that and then I'll come at it?
I mean, part of this is rhetorical, right? Like, what do we do with the box of shame? And I asked this question because, and I want to, you know, obviously we're having a conversation. I want to hear from you. I also, want to ask the community, the maker community, what do y'all do with flops? You know, and I'm not talking about the ones that are, if you sell flops, that's cool. I'm talking about the box of shame, you know,
the stuff that should never see the light of day.
Yes, this cannot exist, you know. And the molds, when the molds snap, what do we do with them, you know? So one of, you know, I've heard and I've seen videos of people like cutting them up into blocks and mixing them into their block molds, grinding them with an old meat grinder and mixing them in. They're not great options. They're okay. I I didn't initiate this conversation with you to show you this, but when I was preparing at the studio, I was like, oh, I should bring this. So this is a stand made with old ply and just molds that I cut up. And
oh, that's awesome.
And then I hung it on my wall and I was just pouring, you know, I did put some virgin silicone on this just to make it look good. But a lot of it was just, you know,
the extra that you have in your cups after you do a pour.
Yeah, exactly. And just trying to get creative of like, what do we do with this waste? Because I don't want to throw it away, you know. And in any industry, there's waste. So how can we get creative? Hey, y'all, if you make toys, let's figure out a creative way to use this, you know.
I have my perspective and in terms of I want to be as kind to the environment and the world as I can be. Now, I chose not to have kids, and so I figure I'm doing pretty good by the world. But on the other hand, you know, there's no reason to do any more damage than we need to. And I would love for us to figure out some way to, I don't know, create some kind of a, maybe even a depot where everybody ships their shredded bits, and then we can turn it into something or give it to a silicone recycler or some sort. Because the size that we are, we really don't have the ability to make it worthwhile. One of the things you asked me earlier was about whether or not I sell flops. And I chose not to. Or if I do, they're very, very specific. They might have a warped base or something like that. But on my website, I do have a section that's flops and experiments. And in there, it may say flop because of color or something like that. Those are the kind of flops that I'm okay with selling. But if it's something that actually is unintended, that's kind of the way I'll put it, is that it didn't come out right. I have chosen not to sell those kinds of flops because I don't want there to be products out there that could get on the secondary market and people would see that as my work. And it's not that I would be embarrassed by it, but I wouldn't want them to expect it to be firsts. If they knew that it was a second or a flop or something like that, I'm okay with that.
You can't control that.
Exactly. You know, you can't control how it's perceived by somebody or not perceived, but presented by somebody else on the secondary market. And so I just made that choice not to. And, you know, that's just how I chose to do it. Other folks have.
Yeah, that's noble.
Have gone a different direction. But, you know, I use glove molds for everything that I do. And so shredding them is not an option. And when I develop my processes, I am developing them in such a way that they're very documented and they're very structured. And then when I hand it off to an employee or somebody who's going to be doing it, they can follow my recipe and it's going to come out just fine. I'm kind of big on documentation as much as I can. I'm bad about it, but I like it.
I have another question I want to ask. It doesn't need to be now though. But I brought it up, so let's go. Do you have any surprise favorite tools? Something you didn't expect to love, but you can't live without?
A cuticle trimmer.
I just discovered that, like, last month.
I've been using a cuticle trimmer for last couple of years, and it just makes trimming bases so easy.
Even soft firmnesses?
It is trickier on soft firmnesses.
I can't get them to work with soft.
Once you get down to 0050, it starts to get kind of wonky. 00 get a little that, and it gets a little squishy. But at that point, you can pretty much just squish it down on your countertop and use an X-Acto blade at that point.
Right.
The other one is a crock pot. So whenever I pull something out of the mold, it goes into my crock pot. And it does that final curing, so I don't have to wait. You know, it's not necessarily that you have to wait a really long time for that final curing to happen, but throw it into the crock pot on low. I call it my hot pot, but crock pot on
your
low.
Instapot.
Yeah. Crock pot on low, and you throw it in there for a couple of hours, and it's like it's had, you know, a couple of days to finish curing.
Oh, that's a great tip. Do you have it filled with water or no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with water.
Okay.
And then those are my two big ones.
Mine is an air chuck on an air compressor. I had an air compressor. I was building walls at my last studio and with a nail gun, and then the compressor was kicking around and I had air bubbles, and I was like, I don't want to blow on the base of this, and picking them out with a toothpick is hell. So, and it occurred to me one day, I was like, oh, I got an air chuck and a compressor, and I love that thing.
Uh-huh.
And again, it might just be that it's like a sexy, I like tools, and I, you know, it's a sexy way to resolve a problem, but...
Tell everybody what an air chuck is.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, you've got an air compressor, you have a line for the an air hose, and the air chuck is just a grip with a little knob, and you depress the button, and it shoots out air. You need to be careful not to send out too much air.
Yep.
Because you'll be very unhappy. So be careful. But but I love that tool. And the other thing I use it for is when I'm building a glove mold on something. Or if I'm hand building a mold and layering it up, then you can gently, you know, drizzle your silicone down, and then you can blow it around your master and work any bubbles out. Those ones that hide in little crevices and you can't really get them out, you can just gently blow them out and work them through the master. I love it.
Yeah. You know, I've suggested this to other people, but it's not something I've had to use in the past. If you've ever got a toy that's in the mold and you're trying to get it out, what about using an air compressed air with a nozzle on it to shoot it down into that mold and pop it out? I think that's
where I got that idea from. Now that you say that, uh-huh. I think I saw a tour of Doc Dongle's factory. Thanks, Shot Dad. For the name, not for the... Anyway. And I think I saw a clip of that. I think I was like trying to find behind the scene videos of like, how do the big boys do it? And I think I saw that being done. Never tried it. I don't know.
You know, my designs don't really lend themselves to that too much, so it hasn't really been an issue for me.
Glove molds.
Yeah, yeah. George reminds me about, we also use makeup brushes I use them in a little bit different category because I do resin casting as well.
To ask you about that.
But using makeup brushes to put pigment onto your molds. With resin, nice thing about doing that is that the pigments actually act as a mold release. So you brush down your mold with your pigment, and it actually turns into that becomes your mold release because it sticks to the surface of the resin. And you pop it out
of the resin. Yes. Yeah. Okay. What are you resin casting?
I do a lot of wholesale work for clients.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of gaming accessories. And if you've If you've ever seen any resin boards out there for particular games, I probably made those. But
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm really curious.
So
I'll DM you.
Yeah, yeah. The long story short is that there are certain games that you need to be able to track certain states and certain debuffs or things like that. And having a resin board that you can drop tokens into gives you a way of tracking those things. It's kind of like just cleaning up the play space. So I also do a lot of tokens. I've done a lot of gaming tokens. I think we've done, I think it was last year we crossed something like 1 million tokens made or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. That's cool. I feel bad. We just geeked out and ignored all the questions.
Yeah. Let's see. The Everyday Dongle Award.
Sorry,
from Shop Dad. Yeah, that's... and Brand Flakes is mowing the yard while watching. Okay, good. Okay. I kind of jump back and forth as well. So, you asked me my music choices. What about you?
Again, Fela Kuti, horns. I've been geeking on. I've been getting into like the origins of punk rock, like classic stuff. Stuff that almost isn't even punk, like The Nerves. Husker Du. I've been getting into. This is stuff that, like, when I was younger, I was really into extremes when I was younger, and I just wanted the heaviest thing to blow my eardrums out, and that's not what I want to listen to anymore. So I still love, punk rock, but I'm listening to like the pop stuff that, maybe that's just garage rock, I'm kind of just geeking out. I'm listening to playlists and kind of trying to rediscover some new stuff, my guilty pleasure right now is Kate Bush. I'm sorry. sorry, but I go to the studio and close the windows so like the restaurant next door can't hear me and like crank it, but.
So Spotify or Pandora?
I've been doing Spotify. Is Pandora still, I haven't used it in probably 20 years when it first came out, and you would put on some obscure thing, something that wasn't top 40, and if you didn't hit like and dislike, if you didn't ride that app, then you would end up back on like Spice Girls, which is fine, but that's not where I started, So like, it was problematic for me.
Well, now it's every path leads to Fleetwood Mac, but no, Pandora. Yeah, you kind of have to guide it. The problem now is that you can very easily back it into a corner. Now, the reason I ask that is it kind of gets to, I don't want to have to choose what I'm listening to. I want to just be surprised. I don't want to build a playlist. I just want, I want to be surprised. It doesn't have to be the same artist. I want something in the same genre. But that's one of the things that I like about Pandora is that it kind of surprises me sometimes.
Maybe I'll check that out.
But I think Spotify has. I think Spotify has something similar.
I feel like Spotify sometimes leads me down the same road over and over again, and that maybe I'm using it wrong. I don't know. I'm not pleased about that. So, whatever.
So did we cover everything yet?
Because
I know you had a mold. You had you had the two molds. You had your glove mold and you had your four-piece mold. You had the silk touch. You had your plug. Did we cover all of the... all the things that you, all the visual aids that you brought out?
I think so. I mean, I've got a few extras, but they're redundant. I think that's most of it. I will say that I'm just as a side, quick side note, I'm really into these molds, what I call a mold, a mold for making molds. And this is, I made this a couple years ago, because I'm so bad with, parametric modeling. And so this is my analog response to it, which I'm embarrassed of, but I think it's good to, in the interest of sharing information, this is an analog way to make a mold, which it's not great, this is a mold. This is a glove mold that was poured inside of the mold, and then the original mass, and this was made on top of the original master with a base plate with registration marks in it, right? Okay. So that it lines up exactly into the base of this. I put the mold on the master, lined up with the registration marks, seal it up. I can pour a mold in 7 minutes or something.
Okay.
Gotcha. Which is cool for reproduction. So, you know, if my mold breaks, you know, I can blast one out pretty quick. Now I see, I'm so jealous of the folks that are good at this. You know, I see people making a master and then they make a mold for it. And it's all 3D printed. They're beautiful. They're perfect. Yep. You know, it's just night and day. It's beautiful work.
Shopdad and I were talking after the show last week, and we ran out of time, and there was so much more that we wanted to get to. We're talking about getting together again one more time and getting to some of those topics, and one of them is about molds and mold making. Mm. So that would definitely be one that keep an eye out for.
Yeah, please do that.
Yeah, I mean...
please.
Yeah, there's... I've seen some folks who do that, who they create a mold shell that they can cast around or cast through. And it's definitely something I would love to be able to do, but I have my process and it works.
Yeah.
So let's see. I'm checking to see if I've got any other questions, and think I've covered everything that's on my list. Does anybody else have any questions? We're going to throw it out there to the audience. Molds are a great middle ground. Yeah. Some folks have done kind of like mother molds, but that's a totally different category in the sense that the mother mold is there to give your glove mold structure as opposed to producing new molds. So,
yeah. So, I mean, indispensable. For their use.
Let's see. Now, I'm going to be wrapping up here fairly soon. So, Matt, if you've got any more questions, drop them in the chat. Or you don't have to drop in the chat. You can actually ask me.
I think I'm good. I mean, this has been a blast. Good.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I want to give everybody a heads up. We've got, right now, I am booked out through October. I've got guests lined up for the next 3 months at this point, so that will be freaking awesome. We've got Chillo Fantasy coming on July 31st, Kizu and Friends on August 7th, Dong Sommelier on August 14th, and Ishtar 137 on August 21st. So those last two are collectors, and I'm really interested to get them on and get perspective. Yeah, I want to see. I want to have a conversation with folks who are coming at it from a different direction.
And
that's
great.
Have you worked with anybody in particular, any collectors, or have you done any commission work?
I haven't done any commission work. I get a few requests a year. I think the pricing usually scares people off. It's just a phenomenal amount of labor. Which is fine, you know. That's okay.
Tell me just how expensive that might be. Just kidding. You don't have to throw a number on it, but you know, the amount of time that goes into it.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, the amount of labor that goes into it. And then people are like, "Oh, could you just make this real quick?" No, I can't. You know, I will say that I had a request from a customer. They asked for a medium-sized vac lock silk touch handle, but with a longer handle, which I had been planning on anyway. So that was the impetus to like get moving on the project, you know. And I'm hopefully, if you're listening, I'm getting there. I promise. But yeah, commissions in general, I'm definitely open to them. But it, be forewarned, it's a lot of labor.
Whenever I have had anybody, whenever anybody's asked me about it, number one, I have a few thoughts. Number one, if it were really that popular, somebody would have already asked for it. Somebody would have already made it. Number two, you're going to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000.
Easily.
Based on the amount of time that it's going to take me to do it from start to finish, it's a lot of time. And that's time that I could be spent doing something else.
That's right. So,
Warp Inside. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Let's get the question. Warp
Inside was talking about using a Blender, the 3D shrink wrap modifier with an offset. And
I've heard about that.
Okay.
And hopefully someday I'll get that to work. You know.
Yeah.
It's just not how my head works. It's just not how my head works. At this point, I'm still trying to learn the initial approach. You know what I mean? I haven't been able to learn, from the beginning, like how to start a problem, you know? Because I'm off doing sketches and mock-ups, and you know, I'm a classic artist mind like that, you know. So thank you for the reminder, and I will look into that again.
Because
I want you to be right.
Let's see. Worm Inside says the requests that get me are the medical limits. I always want to help them. Which I assume is kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier when we were talking about accessibility and folks who have particular needs. And I think that's a really hard category to say no to.
Yeah, it's tough. I think half of, I don't know, but I would guess that at least half of the people that use the silk touch handle are average able-bodied folks. And I designed the handle. The intent was to make toys accessible, right? And so I feel that. Like, there's a conflict there where, like, I want to please. This is also, I always want to help everybody out, right? And unfortunately, you just can't be everything to everybody, you know. It's tough. I hate saying no to people, but
yeah, you know. My last question for the night is, how do you protect yourself in terms of emotionally, time-wise, when somebody comes and makes that request of you, how do you kind of protect yourself emotionally? Or I guess that's one way of putting it, but I'll let you run with it any way you want to.
That's a good question. I have to be good to be good to you, so I'm trying And that means I have to be sensitive to myself, and I have to honor myself and my needs, you know, and so that I can bring you 100%. And sometimes me doing that means that I have to say things that don't make people happy, you know? I don't know. Is that the right way to say it? I don't know.
I think that you said it so well just in the very beginning of that, which is that I have to be good in order to do good for you. And, you know, if I'm not good, then I can't do well. And that that prioritization of making sure that you have taken care of yourself to the point where you can take care of other folks is something that a lot of folks should probably grab onto a little bit.
Yeah, and it's not easy, you know?
Yeah. Well, unless you have anything else, I am ready to let you go on with your evening.
Yeah, this has been great. It's been the pleasure has been mine. Thank you so much.
Oh, I've totally enjoyed it. Worm Inside had one last comment, which was they were working with a customer and to make some changes due to medical issues, and then the customer dropped out a quarter of the way in after seeing how much I put it, how much it took. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, I mean, so does that mean that they got left standing with an unpaid bill on labor, you know?
I mean,
it's unfortunate, you know? Mm-hmm. And I understand both sides of that. I'm not throwing shade on any of it. It's just, it's a complicated question to answer, you know? It's just a lot.
It really is. So, well, Matt, thank you so much. Hang out for just a few more minutes. I'm going to do a wrap up here real quick, and then we will get out of here.
Yeah. And thanks, y'all.
Thanks. Say goodnight, everybody. Bye. All right. So that was Matt with Silk Arts. Definitely check out their website, silkarts.com, and you can find them on Twitter as well as Instagram at Silk Arts. And it's SILCARTS. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, this is a company that I have had my eye on for years because of the Silk Touch and the fact that they have made things accessible to everybody, no matter who they are. And with that, I am out, and I'll see you next week. Bye.